feel after I begin the lecture as to how the software or the program interacts with the hardware to actually enable the computer to carry out certain functions. I'm going to conclude the lecture with a discussion of a process control application using a mini computer. And unfortunately, we have a demonstration of the kind of equipment that I'm talking about. The equipment I just mentioned briefly is sitting here. It was brought down by Garrett Manufacturing, who are located in Toronto. What we have on the table consists of a logic patch panel, which is the larger unit, which has a number of gates and flip-flops on it, which can be wired together to perform the logic function that we talked about in the course. On the top of the logic patch panel is a small box, about 5 by 15 or 16, which is a small, we call it a microcomputer. It's actually smaller than any mini computer that's available, but it is a very small general purpose computer, which is useful for a number of control type or educational functions. The computer, together with the interface, is used in the demonstration to control a table which is used to drill printed circuit boards. If you look in your kit, you'll see that the printed circuit board that mounts your socket has a number of holes in it. This equipment could be set up to automatically drill all the holes within that board. So, near the end of the lecture, we'll look at this particular application of interfacing a mini computer, a small computer, through some form of standardized logic to some kind of a machine. But first of all, I'd like to get at some of the principles of computers before we get into this application. Here I've shown the essentials of a computer. The general purpose computer has a memory. We talked about some memory elements before. This particular computer has a flip-flop memory. There are no cores in it. Simply a large number of flip-flops that can be addressed to store the program and the data. The memory interacts with what is known as the central processing unit, the CPU, so that it can fetch information from the memory into the CPU, and it can send information back from the CPU to the memory. There are inputs to the computer. These, in a general system, may come from a card reader. They may come from switches on the console. There are many sources, of course, of inputs to a computer, which often come into the CPU and are routed to the memory, and at some time may be recalled and processed by the CPU, may be sent back to the memory, or perhaps these inputs could be sent to the outside world via some output mechanism on the computer. The output mechanism, well, there are a number of output mechanisms on this equipment here. One output mechanism is simply the lights that display the status of various registers. These form a type of output. There are logical outputs on this equipment that go from the computer to the interface. And from there, they're taken to the drilling machine, and they control stepping motors in this case, and they pneumatic activator for the drill that forms the Z-axis. So this is basically the kind of machine that we're talking about. It has been common in the past to build sequencing controls from special purpose wired logic. However, because mini computers are coming down in price, it's becoming very attractive to use a standard off-the-shelf mini computer to perform much of the functions that were normally performed by wired logic. This particular computer sells for about $1,500 and can do an awful lot of control. The other mini computers that are available normally sell for prices ranging from $3,000 up. So rather than design a lot of special purpose wired logic, it's common now to buy an off-the-shelf mini computer, program it to do a particular job, and interface that to the rest of the system. It's of course very easy to change the functions performed by a computer because you just have to change the program and you don't have to change any of the wiring. So So you have a lot of flexibility when you do these computers. Because the price is coming down so quickly, this is a very feasible approach. Okay, I'm going to try and tell you what a computer looks like inside. I think the best place to start here is to discuss the computer memory. A computer memory consists of a large number of memory cells, and a cell here is really a row in this matrix that I've shown. Each cell is capable of storing a number of bits of information. So that this little square here really consists of a flip-flop, which can store a 0 or a 1. This little square here is another flip-flop which can store a 0 or a 1. And here we have 8 of these across, so each memory cell consists of 8 flip-flops. And we say it can store 8 bits, or has an 8-bit word. This is what this particular small computer has. The mini computers that are the larger mini computers available on the market usually have 16 bits per word. You can write much bigger numbers in a memory cell than you can with this computer. Okay, so there are a number of cells. This particular computer has 256 cells, so it can store 256 numbers in this computer. Once again, the larger mini computers normally start off with about 4,096, which is 2 to the 12th memory cells, and you can usually add on to the memory as you require. So these cells are what you use to store the data in. Now, a very important concept of memory is the fact that we have to be able to address these cells to be able to put data in a particular cell, or be able to take data out of a particular cell. So associated with each cell is a memory address. And here we have 256 cells, and if we give them numbers, we can give them a number from 0 to 255. So each cell now has a unique number, and since we're dealing with binary logic, it's easier, or easiest, to use binary numbers to refer to each cell. So this first cell has address 0, which is this binary number. The next cell has address 1, which is this binary number. And the last cell in this particular memory has address 255, which is given by this binary number. So we store the information in the cells, and we use addressing to get that information out of memory or to put it in. This is a picture of the hardware associated with the memory. As I said before, this computer uses flip-flops for memory. These are available on the market for about 256 bits for about $20. Now this computer has a total of 256 memory cells, and each cell has 8 bits. So the cost of the memory in this computer is about 20 times 8, about $160 for the fast flip-flop type memory used in this computer. If these things are bought in volume, a typical cost now is about 1 cent per bit for solid-state flip-flop type memory. And this price is coming down, so there's a trend away from core memories in video computers. So this is the memory. There are lines that drive that memory, which supply the address to the memory. Here we have 8 address lines corresponding to the 8 address bits. So if we have the number 0 on these lines, which would mean all these lines low, then the cell that we would be accessing would be memory cell 0. The address that we use to access the memory is normally stored in a memory address register. Since we have 8 bits in our address, this register is simply a collection of 8 flip-flops, which store the address. Okay, so the outputs of these flip-flops supply the address to the memory. We have 8 input lines to the memory, and we have 8 output lines from the memory, and there is a control line that drives the memory. When the control line is such that a 0 is applied here, so that's in the read mode, then what we get on the output lines is the content of the memory cell that is being addressed by the memory address register. Okay, so in the read mode, the output lines give us the data that are in the cell that's being addressed by the memory address register. When this line is set to 1 level, then the memory is in the write mode, and the data that's on the input lines is transferred and stored in the memory cell that is defined by the memory address register. Okay, so if we have the number 3 set up on these lines, we put data on here and set this to the 1 level or the write level, then memory cell 3 will get the data that we want to store in memory. Okay, so that is basically how a memory works, and at the appropriate time within the cycle, the computer must supply the memory address register with the right address, it must supply the right inputs, it'll take the outputs, and the computer or the CPU must also supply the right level to the control signal for the memory. Now I'm going to get away from the hardware a bit and look at the instructions that a typical computer like this has. These instructions are normally coded as a series of zeros and ones, or bits, and as such they're stored in memory at specified cells. But also the data, or the numbers that you're going to work on, are stored in the memory at certain locations. This computer has about 16 or so instructions. And I'll just run through some of these so that you get an idea of what it can do, and then we'll look at a program that makes use of these instructions. One important instruction is a store instruction. What this does is store the content of the accumulator. The store instruction stores the content of the accumulator into a memory cell that is specified by certain bits in the address portion of the instruction. I'm saying quite a bit there. First of all, the accumulator is a register, it's a group of flip-flops in the CPU that is used normally to store the results of arithmetic operations. And it's a register that the programmer can manipulate. So when you write a program and you want to specify that you're going to store the accumulator at some location in memory, what you have to do is specify a 0 and a 1 in these two positions, which identifies the instruction as a store instruction. If you run down here, no other instruction has a 0 or a 1 in the first two positions. So that the fact that that's a 0 and that's a 1 identifies this combination of bits as a store instruction. I'll leave this position for now. There's sophistication we'll look at in a few minutes. These other 5 bit positions specify the address that you want the accumulator stored in. So if you write, for example, 01, which means you're trying to execute a store instruction, a 0, and 00101, then you have a store instruction, and you have the address 5. So that combination of bits would take the content of the accumulator, which is this important register in the CPU, and store that data in memory cell number 5. Okay, so you have an instruction now which you can program to shift information from the CPU or from this active register into the memory. Another important instruction is an add instruction. The computer knows it's an add instruction because of the 1-0 in these two positions. And this tells you which cell you want to take the data from to add to the accumulator. So what the add instruction does, it adds the content of memory location AAA to the accumulator. Okay? So if I wrote the instruction 1-0-0 in that position, which I'll discuss later, 0-0-0-1-1, then I specified address 3. So I'm going to take what's in memory cell 3, and I'm going to add that data to what's in the accumulator. Okay, so if memory cell 3 contains the number 25, and the accumulator contains the number 15, then after I've executed this instruction, the accumulator will contain the sum 25 plus 15. Okay? So this way I can add what's in a particular memory cell to what's in the accumulator and leave the result in the accumulator, which is this important register in the CPU. So this instruction enables me to take information from the memory and bring it into the CPU. You'll note that the accumulator originally had 0 in it, and I issued an add instruction, I would be adding data in the address memory cell to 0, which means the accumulator would then have what was in the memory cell. Okay, so in addition to being able to add, the add instruction is a means of just taking information from memory into the CPU, or into the accumulator, which is registered in the CPU. I think I'll skip the jump instruction for now. These three instructions all refer to memory, and they have a field or some locations in which you insert the memory address. The rest of the instructions for this computer do not refer to memory and simply cause different actions in the registers of the CPU. So these are sometimes called register instructions. So if we have a 1 and a 1 in here, then that defines that we have a register instruction. That's how the computer knows it's trying to process a register instruction. And these other 4 bits will define exactly which one of the register instructions you're trying to execute. So if you store in memory 1-1 and 4 zeros, and then any old thing in here, and the computer brings that bit combination into the CPU and attempts to execute it, it will result in clearing the accumulator. And by clearing the accumulator, we simply mean setting all the bits in the accumulator to 0. Okay, so by executing this instruction, we will clear the accumulator. So if the accumulator had the number 27 in it, and the computer executed a clear instruction, then the accumulator would have the number 0 stored in it. We put it. Another instruction is a complement instruction, which simply changes every bit in the accumulator to the complemented value. So if you have all zeros in the accumulator, and you issue a complement instruction, you'll end up with all ones in the accumulator.
Okay. I'll shift that over a little bit. So.
Another instruction is a rotate left instruction, which means that you take the bits of the accumulator and move them over one position to the left. Okay? So as was mentioned in the last lecture, you're shifting one position to the left, which is equivalent to multiplying that data by 2. We have the number 0, 0, 0, all zeros and a least significant 1 in the accumulator. When you shift that one position to the left, you'll end up with 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, and a 1 and a 0. So you start off with 1 in the accumulator, you end up with 2 in the accumulator, you multiply what you've had in there by 2. So a rotate is a means by which the computer can multiply by 2. A rotate right is a means by which the computer can divide by 2. You have 4 in the accumulator, you issue a rotate right instruction, and you'll end up with 2 in the accumulator. This is an instruction which is used to take the content of the switches that you set up on the computer and to have them transferred into the accumulator. Won't go into some of these in detail. And no option to do anything. A halt instruction stops the computer. A skip on note, I'll discuss these skip instructions later. An input instruction is a means of taking the content of some register outside the computer and transferring it into the accumulator of the computer. So this is how you cause data to be inputted to the computer, and this is how you get data out of the computer with an output instruction. Let's make use of some of these now in a simple program. Here's my program. It consists, this is the program here, it consists of a bunch of bit patterns stored in the memory. And this program is going to be stored in memory cells 4 to 14. So here I'm using 10 memory cells for this simple program. And the program now just consists of a bunch of bit patterns which are stored in these memory cells. So the first instruction of this program is defined by 1, 1 and the rest zeros. And if we look back at the definition of all our instructions, we see that that combination of bits corresponds to the clear instruction. So the first instruction of this program clears the accumulator. So no matter what you have in there, after the computer executes that instruction, you have all zeros in the accumulator. The next instruction, we can note by these two bits here, corresponds to an add instruction. And if we look at the address part, we see that that is the binary number for 11. So this instruction then adds what is in memory location 11 to the accumulator. Okay? So we're adding what's in memory location 11 to the accumulator. And if we look at what's in memory location 11, we see we have this number here. Okay, which is 18, okay? This bit pattern here corresponds to the decimal number 18. So after we've executed the second instruction, we now have the number 18 in the accumulator. On the next instruction, we execute the complement instruction. Okay, so here we take whatever is in the accumulator, we change all the 1's to a 0 and all the 0's to a 1. The next instruction is an add 13 instruction. It's an add because of these bits, and we have the number 13 here. So we add to that bit pattern in the accumulator what's in memory cell 13, and in memory cell 13 we have the number 1. The next instruction is an add 12. So we add to the accumulator what's in 12, and in 12 we have the number 25. We then take what's in the accumulator and we store it in memory cell 14. Initially 14 had this bit pattern, and after we've executed the store instruction, it'll have this other complicated bit pattern. And then we issue our last instruction, which is a halt instruction, which will stop the computer. Okay, so that's our simple program. Now let's look and see what that program did. Here's the program that we just executed. We had executed it. This is the content of the accumulator at various stages of the process. And this is the content of memory location 14. So after we've issued the clear instruction, the accumulator contains all zeros. We then add what's in number memory cell 11 to the accumulator, so then we have this number in the accumulator. We then complement that, so we change all the zeros to a 1 and all the 1s to a 0. Okay, so that 0 becomes a 1, that 0 becomes a 1, this 1 becomes a 0, and so on. Then we take that number and we add the contents of 13, which was a 1. So if you add 1 to that number, you will get this particular number here. And that's in the accumulator. We then add what's in 12. And what is in 12 was the number 25. And after we've done that addition, we end up with this number in the accumulator. Then we take that number and we store it in memory location 14. So we take that and transfer it to memory location 14. And then we issue a halt. We started off by adding 11, which was the number 18, if you recall from before. At this stage here, we added what's in 12, which was a number 25. And if we subtract 18 from 25, we get the number 7, which in binary is equivalent to a whole string of zeros and 111. So what we've done here, and unfortunately this demonstration of this example didn't go over too well because we didn't cover 2's complement subtraction in the last lecture. But I've performed subtraction here by the 2's complement addition method. In the first few instructions, I formed the 2's complement of the number 18, which is really the negative of 18. And then I added the number 25. So by this technique, I'm able to subtract, even though the computer does not have a subtract instruction, the number 18 from the number 25. And I got the number 7, which is 111. Okay, so what I've really written here is a small subroutine to perform subtraction using a limited number of bit juggling type instructions that the computer has. Okay, by similar technique now, you can perform multiplication, division, and in fact any other operation that you can define by a set of rules or an algorithm. Okay, so that's an example of a very simple program. This computer can execute. You'll note that in the program that we just talked about, the instructions were executed in strict sequence, one after the other. Often in computing, you don't want to execute the instructions in sequence, but you want to change the sequence depending upon the data that you generate in the accumulator, or perhaps the data that you read in the accumulator from the outside world. So this way, you can go and have the computer do different things depending upon what you get in the accumulator. Or, stated another way, you can have the computer do things depending upon what it sees outside of the computer if you are reading information in from the outside world. So, here I've demonstrated a couple of instructions. One is a SM0. SM, in Canada we say Z rather than Z. This is an SNZ instruction. It stands for skip on non-zero accumulator. Here we have a jump instruction. So what this does is, once we execute an add instruction, then we issue a skip on non-zero accumulator. If the accumulator is non-zero when we execute this instruction, then the next instruction we execute will be the instruction here, which is a complement instruction. Okay, so if we added the number 25 into the accumulator, when we do this, the accumulator will be non-zero. So the next instruction that the computer executes will therefore be this instruction here. It will have skipped this jump instruction. And then it will just carry on down. If the accumulator happened to be zero, when we executed the skip on non-zero accumulator, it would have found that the accumulator was zero, so it wouldn't have skipped. So it would then execute this instruction, and then this instruction. And this instruction says jump to memory location 20. Or in other words, take the next instruction from memory location 20. So if the computer did not skip, the next instruction will be taken from down here, which is an add instruction. Okay, so if the accumulator is zero, we will not do all the instructions in here. If the accumulator is non-zero, the computer will execute all these additional instructions in here. Which these instructions, for example, may say lower the drill on the printed circuit board if you're ready to do it. Otherwise, jump call is part of the logic which lowers the drill and wait for something to happen in the outside world. Okay, so the skip and the jump are two important instructions which give the computer a decision-making ability. I think I won't go into this slide in detail, but that extra bit that I didn't tell you about when we talked about the instructions is an indirect address bit, and you might know that we only have 5 A's or address bits in the memory reference instruction. There are only 5 A's in the add and the jump and the store instruction. Since we only have 5 bits there, we can only address 2 to the 5th or 32 memory locations. But I said that the computer had 256 memory locations. So then obviously we're going to need some other addressing capability to get at the other cells. And by means of this indirect addressing bit, we can do that. I won't go into the details, you, I think it's understandable in the text. Okay, so what we've talked about so far then is the memory of the computer, how instructions and data are transferred to and from memory, and we've looked at a simple program to do something. We'll look at some programming or some software for this computer. Now I'd like to jump back and try and give you an appreciation for the hardware that's used to actually execute these instructions.
Sir?
Yes?
If you would take the whole projector and shift it on the table, I think you'd get the display centered on a screen. It might give you, might help you.
Something like that?
Yeah. Right, there you go. Mm-hmm. Walking it off again.
Yeah, I'm trying to get things what I think would be important, but.
We're in a sleep.
Pardon?
We're in a sleep. Rotate the slide. Put the diagram on the slant. Cross the diagonal and this rectangle.
Is that about right? Okay. What we have here are the inputs to the computer. We have the outputs from the computer. We have the memory, which does all the storing of data and instructions. We have these important registers in the CPU, which are used for temporarily storing things. And we have an adder, which is the heart of this simple computer. Each one of these lines on here really corresponds to 8 lines. They're buses that are capable of transferring the contents of a whole cell or the contents of a whole register. Each one of these registers are 8-bit registers. They each have 8 flip-flops. Here we see the memory address register, which supplies the address to the memory in the manner that we showed initially. The program counter is an 8-bit register which stores the address of the next instruction that we want the computer to execute. We have a memory data register, which is a register for storing data from memory, usually temporarily. It's not too important. The accumulator is an 8-bit register which stores the results of our calculations that we mentioned before. We have an instruction register, which is an 8-bit register, which stores the bit patterns corresponding to the instruction that we're trying to execute at the present time. The inputs to these registers and to the memory are taken off this bus, which comes from the adder. So after you add a number, the results of that addition will be on this bus. And by applying a clock signal to each flip-flop in these registers, let me state that a different way. By applying a clock pulse to all the flip-flops in the register that you want data transferred to, you can take the information off of this bus and put it into the accumulator that you wish. So if we have some information, for example, at the output of the adder, and you want to put it into the accumulator, then the control part of the computer would apply a pulse to each flip-flop in the accumulator register, and that would take what's on this bus and put it into the accumulator. It wouldn't affect what's in the other things. If you wanted to take what's at the output of the adder and put it into, say, the memory address register and the instruction register, then you would apply a pulse to both this register and this register. So you would take information off the bus and put it into two registers. The outputs that go to the outside world are simply taken from the flip-flops in the accumulator, and they go to the outside world as 8 lines. Out of the instruction register, there are some lines that also go to the outside world that you can use to direct this output to a particular location in the outside world. Okay, so to get stuff into these registers or into memory, we simply clock these various boxes so that what's on this bus will go into these boxes or registers. The inputs to the adder now, each are formed by 8-bit buses, and these come from the outputs of these registers and from memory. So for example, this IR line we have here is really the 8 output lines from the 8 flip-flops that make up the instruction register. These are all connected together to this particular bus. The 8 outputs of the PC, the program counter, which is this register here which keeps track of the next instruction we're going to execute, are also connected onto that bus. Similarly, the outputs from the memory address register, the memory data register, all the outputs from the memory come onto this bus. The outputs from the switches that are on the front console that we use to program the computer with come onto this particular bus. The outputs from the accumulator come onto this bus. This signal ACC is the, or these 8 lines that form this loop here, are the 8 lines from the complement outputs of the flip-flops in the accumulator. This is what we use to form the complement of the number in the accumulator. ACR are the outputs from the accumulator shifted over one position, so you just jog all your wires a bit as you bring them onto this bus. Similarly, ACCL. Inputs here are the inputs from lines that come in from the outside world. Let's see how we execute an add instruction with this hardware. Let's assume we're at the appropriate part of the cycle where we want to actually perform the addition. So what we want to do in that case is take what's in the accumulator and add it to data which is being addressed by the memory address register that currently resides in memory. So you want to take data from here, add it to data in there, and store the sum of those two back into the accumulator. So what you do then at that part of the cycle that executes the actual addition is to put onto this bus the outputs from the accumulator. There's a gating signal that puts one of these things onto the bus. So if you want to do an add, the logic would put the outputs from the accumulator onto that bus. It would put the outputs from the memory onto this bus, so it would select these outputs here, and it would select these here. So now we have the data on the memory being applied to the adder, the data from the accumulator being applied to the adder. The adder will add these two numbers, and it will form an 8-bit sum here, which will be on this bus. And then you simply clock the accumulator, so that sum then goes back into the accumulator. Okay? So the actual add part of the add instruction is gates the content from that and the content from that into the adder, the sum is formed, and you clock that back into the accumulator. If you want to take the inputs, say that come in from this device here, and put them into the accumulator, you'd simply gate these inputs onto this bus. Don't gate anything onto this bus. So the adder will add the data from here to zero, which means that this data will just pass right through the adder. And then at the right time during the execution of the input instruction, you'll clock the accumulator so that this data here then will end up in the accumulator. Okay, so there are a lot of pulses that are generated during the execution of every instruction which cause the data to shift between the various registers and the inputs and outputs as required. This is essentially what's on the front panel of this computer. The black dots correspond to light-emitting diodes, which are connected to the flip-flops in the accumulator register, the program counter, and the instruction register. Okay, so by just looking at these light-emitting diodes, or lights, you can tell what is in the accumulator, what is in the program counter, or what is in the instruction register. These are the more important registers. That's why they're brought up to the console, so that the person that's operating the computer can see what the computer is doing. So this is a means of getting a visual output from the computer. For example, in our little subroutine we looked at before, which was factor 18 and 25, if we were to examine the contents of the accumulator after executing that subroutine, we would find that these three lights would be on, corresponding to the number 7, and all the other lights would be off. And that would be the way we would get the output of our calculation. These ovals here correspond to switches, which we use to program the bit patterns in memory that form our program. So if we want to store the number 5 in memory location 4, what we would do would be first of all set up the number 4 on these switches, and the number 4 in binary is simply all zeros, 100. So there we form the number 4 on our switches and set them up that way. Then we would push the load address button, which would take the number 4 and put it into the memory address register. So now we've got our address set up as number 4. Now if we want to store the number 5 in that particular address, We would then set up the numbers 5 on these switches, which correspond to all zeros of 1, 0, 1. And we push the load data button. And that'll take what's in the switches and put it in the memory cell that we have occurred to set up the address for. So this is the way you have to program the machine language code of this computer. For each instruction, you have a location for it, you know what the bit pattern is for that instruction, and you feed it in simply by manipulating these buttons. The top circles correspond to input and output connectors, which are used for getting data into the computer and for taking data out of the computer. So these outputs, as we showed before, really just come from the outputs of the accumulator. So on these connectors, you have the voltages, which correspond to the voltages at the output of the flip-flops of the accumulator. Similarly, here you have connectors which you can take the inputs from some outside device and connect it to the two buses that go into the adder. The two buses into the adder with the X bus and the Y bus. And this is where you put the data that you want to feed into the computer. These signals up here are inputs and outputs which the computer can generate to clock information either from the outputs into some device that's in the outside world, or it can be used to gate signals from certain outside world inputs to the computer. The flag is a connector on which you can apply a signal, and there is an instruction called skip on flag, which the computer can test to see whether you have a logic 0 or a logic 1 on this connector. So by testing the flag, you can skip, depending upon certain conditions outside the computer. The last slide which I wish to use to discuss the basic operation of a computer. And this is the timing diagram, or the state diagram, that tells us what is done during the execution of an individual instruction. Let's assume that, actually this is just a counter. And to generate a particular state, you can decode the counter with the decoder that was talked about before to get a particular line activated that will correspond to a state. Looked upon another way, if you have a counter with a number of flip-flops in it, the state designated by a circle with a zero in it might correspond to the number zero stored in the counter. This would correspond to the number one stored in the counter. So to go from one state to another, a clock pulse is taken from one state to the other. So this corresponds to the number 2 stored in the counter, the number 3, and 4, and 5, and so on. This computer here, I believe, has a 2 megahertz clock, which means that every 500 nanoseconds, every half a microsecond, that is, we go from one state to the other. So the counter then will count from 0 to 1, 1 to 2, at a half a microsecond time interval. So, in order to execute an instruction, the first thing that the computer does, and it does this in state 1, that's when the counter is storing the number 1, is take what's in the program counter and put it into the MAR. Now at this point in time, the program counter has the address of the instruction that you want to execute. So what you're doing is taking the address of the instruction that you want to execute and putting it into the MAR. Okay? So what we're really doing at that point in time is taking what's in here, in this register, and putting it in that register. And the way we do that is as follows. We take the output of the program counter, which comes into this bus here, and we gate it onto that bus. We don't put anything onto this top bus, which means the output of the program counter will pass through the adder and appear on this bus. And then we take and we clock the MAR. And that then takes what's on the bus and puts it in the array. So we go around this loop from the output here, through the adder, and back into the MAR. Okay? So one of the first things we do then is take what's in the program counter, which is the address of the next instruction to be executed, and put it into the memory address register. Clock pulse comes along, it updates the counter, and when the counter reads 2, we do a couple of things. We first of all add 1 to the program counter. We add 1 so that now the program counter points to the next sequential instruction that the computer should execute. So remember that normally instructions are executed in sequence. So the address of the next instruction is just 1 more than the address of the previous one. So here we update the address of the next instruction. We take what's in the memory and we put it into the instruction register. And of course, we're getting out of memory at this stage the contents of the cell that is being addressed by the memory address register. So what we're doing here then is taking the instruction that we wish to execute and we're putting it into the instruction register. Okay? So we are then simply taking the instruction out of memory. We do that by putting it through here, and we are going to gate it into the instruction register. Okay? So what the instruction register now contains the instruction that we want to execute. Now, the clock will change depending upon the kind of instruction that is now stored in the instruction register. If it's a simple register instruction that doesn't require getting more data out of memory or putting data into memory, the counter will then go from the count of 2 to the count of 6. And when it's in the count of 6, it'll do what that instruction wants the computer to do. For example, on the register instruction, it may simply complement the accumulator. So in state 6 then, for a register instruction, it will simply take the complement of the accumulator out of the accumulator, feed it through the adder, and gate that complement back into the accumulator. If it's a memory reference instruction, which is one that has to be put in memory now, the counter will go from the count of 2 to the count of 3. And in the count of 3, what it does is take the 5 low-order bits, the L stands for low-order bits, that are in the instruction register. Remember that the instruction register is storing our address. The instruction register is storing our instruction. And if we have a memory reference instruction, these 5 low-order bits are the address that's associated with that instruction. So, when the counter reads 3, the address bits that are in the instruction are put into the 5 low-order address bits of the memory address register. So now, in effect, the memory address register is pointing to the data, or the memory cell, that we're concerned with in memory. So if it's a store instruction, for example, the memory address register will now contain the address that we want to store the data into. So then we go from state 3 down to state 6, which will actually perform the store instruction, if it's a store word processing. If it's an add instruction, it will perform the add down here. And Then when we're finished that, if we don't have a hull construction, we'll come back up here and we'll start over again. We'll load the PC into the MAR. Remember that the MAR has been updated by one, so it now points to the next construction. We'll keep cycling through this thing until we finally come to a halt, in which case the computer will stop at the zero state. Okay, something like that should really be explained in about 2 weeks. I hope you got something out of it. I think the key thing is that a type of counter is used to generate a number of states of time intervals at which a number of registered transfers take place to enable the computer to do all the things that it must do. Okay, now I'd like to look at this simple application. This box is a small computer on top of the interface. The interface contains some logic. The outputs from certain elements on the interface panel are amplified by amplifiers. And these amplifiers in turn drive stepping motors, which are used to position the table underneath the drill. So these two lines here, and each stepping motor requires two lines to sequence it, move the table back and forth in the X direction. And the direction will depend upon the sequence of pulses that you apply in these two lines. Similarly, these two amplifiers supply the pulses to the Y stepping motors. And depending upon the sequence you put on here, this stepping motor will either step forward or backwards. Okay, so here we have, by these two stepping motors, we have the means to position the table in the XY direction. Another signal from the interface is used to drive an SCR. In actual fact, what I'm describing here is slightly different from what we have here. This setup has a pneumatic actuator on the Z-axis, whereas what I've got here really shows a solenoid to drive the Z-axis, but this is a minor change. So a signal here can be used to drive a solenoid or a pneumatic system, which can cause the drill to go up and down. So these now are the main outputs from the interface, which position the table, cause the drill to go up and down. Also, when the drill is going up and down, there's a signal to turn the drill on and turn the drill off. Let's look at, in more detail, at what's in the interface. I guess before I do that, I should look at the signals that are sent from the computer to the interface, so that you have some idea of what the interface is processing to generate these particular signals. This is the format of the control words that are sent from the computer to the interface. These are simply eight lines that come out of the computer from the accumulator of the computer and are sent to the interface. They are, at the appropriate time of the cycle, taken from the accumulator and put into a register in the interface. Okay. And there are eight bits. One bit is a signed bit, which can either be a 0 or a 1, which tells the interface whether it wants to increment or decrement the X or the Y position. If it's a 0, then we'll move in the positive direction. If it's a 1, we'll move in the negative direction. L is a 0 or a 1, which tells us whether or not we want to lower the drill. If L is a 0, we do not lower the drill after we move it. If L is a 1, we do lower the drill. So that's another control bit in our control word. C tells us whether we want to change the x-axis or the y-axis. If C is a 0, it's the x-axis. If C is a 1, it's the y-axis we're concerned with. These five bits tell us how far, or the displacement, of either the x or the y-axis. Each bit in here corresponds to 0.05 of an inch, 50 units. Okay, so if we have the number 00011 in here, for example, we're specifying a displacement of 3, that's the number 3, times 0.05 of an inch, 150 mils, 0.15 of an inch. Okay, so a typical control word then would look like this, which says, move the x-axis in the negative direction. When you get it moved, lower the drill and move it 150 mils. So these kind of control signals are sent from the computer to the interface. The interface then takes over and does what is required to move the table and the drill. So if you want to drill 10 holes, if you want 10 motions, you specify 10 control words. When this thing was originally programmed, the program took up about 32 words. In the 256 word memory, this left about 220 words that could specify positions of the table or motions. So even with a small computer, you can still specify 32 motions. These are all specified by these control words, which are outputted in turn to the interface. This is the details of an interface. When we are ready to cause a new motion, the control word comes out from the outputs of the accumulator and appear at the inputs of this 8-bit register. So this just contains 8 flip-flops. When you want to actually transfer that control word from the computer to this register or to the interface, you then issue an output instruction which causes this particular line to go to the low level. What that does is causes the information on these lines to be transferred. Let me go back a bit. First of all, this out C clears this register and then transfers this data into this register. This out C clears this 5-bit counter. It clears this particular flip-flop. It clears this flip-flop. And it also clears this flip-flop here via this line in here. Okay, so by issuing this output instruction, we've cleared a number of flip-flops, we've transferred the control word into the 8-bit register. When this flip-flop is cleared initially by this signal, the Q bar will go to the 1 level, which means that we have a 1 input to this AND gate. There is a clock signal here then, which now can pass through this AND gate. Okay, so by clearing this, we allow pulses to come from the clock through this AND gate. Each pulse from the clock goes into a sequence generator, which sets up the appropriate sequence for the lines that feed the stepping motors. And this sequence will depend upon the S signal of the control word, which gives us the sign either to go positive or negative. And the C signal tells us which coordinate, X or Y, we want to drive. And Okay, so by means of S and C, which we get from the output of this register, we can energize the appropriate drive lines to the X or Y solenoid. So with this AND gate open, pulses come from the clock and are fed to the stepping order. With this particular setup, it takes 200 pulses to move the stepping motor, 200 pulses to the stepping motor will cause the table to move 0.05 of an inch. Okay? And each bit, remember, corresponded to 0.05 of an inch. So we want to send 200 pulses out of here for each 0.05 displacement that we specify. So we're sending pulses out here like crazy. At the same time, we feed those pulses into a counter in which we divide the pulse rate by 200. That divided pulse rate goes into a 5-bit counter. So after 200 pulses come out here, this counter will increment by 1. After 600 pulses have come out of here, this counter will have incremented by 3, and so on. And what we do continuously is compare the number stored in this counter with the number stored in the displacement part of the control word which we have stored in this register. So when this counter is equal to the displacement portion of the control word, a signal will come out of this coincident detector circuit, which is just some logic gates, which will cause this flip-flop to be set. When that flip-flop is set, the Q bar goes to a zero. We have a zero at the output of the at the input to the AND gate then, so no more pulses can get through. Okay, so when that happens then, we've set the required number of pulses to either the X or the Y stepping order to cause the appropriate displacement.
What happens to the count during the time that the coincidence detector is shutting things off?
That'll happen. This coincidence detector is much, much faster than the clock. Okay. So the counter will store the count before the next clock pulse comes along, the coincidence detector will shut all those other things off.
So it's bad. It's got to be bad.
Much faster. That's right. I think about the top rate for feeding stepping motors is about 20 kilohertz, which is, I guess, 50 microseconds. And typically these gates operate in a 10 nanosecond range. So the gates are typically 500 times faster. I think that's rather a lot faster. So once we set this flip-flop, then that will cause, if we want the drill to be lowered, and that will be specified by this L signal, that will cause this flip-flop to be set. That flip-flop then, or the output of that flip-flop, is amplified and sent to the solenoid, which then will lower the drill. When the drill is lowered to a particular level, a micro-switch will be triggered, and that micro-switch will cause this flip-flop to reset, which will in turn cause the drill to be raised. And at the same time, that micro switch will then cause this flip-flop to be set. And the computer has an instruction which can continually test this flag to see when this whole operation is complete. So when the computer notes that this flag is now set, it knows that it's now time to send another control word to this register. And the whole sequence will be started over. Okay. I'm sure you'll want to look at this in more detail in your notes, but I hope this gives you some feel for the kind of things that you can do with not too complex logic. I'd just like to briefly show you a flow chart, which really is a gross way of describing the program that the computer is executing. In this, we come into the, when we start our program to control our machine, we come in and we initialize the interface would probably just be sending some signals to the interface to clear the registers. Then we ask, is this flag set? If initially we send some signals to the interface to accept the flag, then when we ask this question by issuing a skip flag instruction, the answer will be yes. So to come down here, we do some initializing. We get the computer to ask a question, and we do that by our skip instruction. Then we ask, have all control words been sent to the interface? And we do that by testing the counter in the computer, which will keep track of the number of control words we want to send to our interface. If the answer is no, as it should be when we first start up, then we will cause the computer, or instructions will cause the computer, to send the next control word to the interface. So we come down here, the interface will now cause the table to move. We'll come back up here, down this path here, and the computer will ask the question, is the flag set? Now the computer will whip around this path very, very quickly, much faster than the table will respond. So the computer will then find that the flag is not set. Okay, so it'll then come up here, and it'll ask the question again, is the flag set? And it'll keep asking this question at a rate of about once every 1.5 microseconds, because this is just the execution of the register instruction, and the register instruction takes 3 states in our state diagram we looked at before. So about every 150 microseconds, every 1.5 microseconds, the computer will ask this question. We'll usually get the answer no, but when the interface is all finished, we'll get the answer yes, and we'll then be able to send another control word to the interface. So this is the basis of the program, the one we have to write to drive the table. I'd now like to call upon a systems engineer from Garrett Manufacturing, who brought this equipment down, who will turn the equipment on and demonstrate it. I'm sure he'll be very happy also to answer any questions that you may have. Yes?
Couldn't you only address 32 memory locations of the range that
you require? Well, I didn't go into the details, but that extra bit in the memory reference instruction is called an indirect address bit. And if you follow the text, you will see how that can be used to address 256 words. So by means of that indirect address bit, we can extend the addressing capability from 32 words to 256 words. And by means of having an external register, we can further extend the addressing capability of this computer to almost unlimited memory.
When you read something, do you have to rewrite it back on the memory, or is it destructive?
No, this is a non-destructive memory. You do not have to read it. Most core memories are destructive, and you have to reread it to get it back into the core. Memory, this is an automatic for you. But with the type of memory we're using here, it's a non-destructive memory, so the content of memory is not destructive. Are there any other questions I can answer before we...
What happens if a computer is shut down overnight? What would the instructions go?
Depends. This computer uses an integrated circuit memory. This is known as a volatile memory, which means that when you shut the power down, you lose everything. So on this particular computer, you can just run it off the 60 cycle lines, and the power goes down, you lose your program. So it's quite common with this kind of memory to have a backup battery to drive your memory. You don't have one here, but this type of computer is becoming available, and batteries are becoming available as a standby power source, so that your memory does not have to be reloaded every time you power it down. With a core memory computer, you do not leave the contents of the cores when you power it down. Most of the media computers that are currently available do in fact use core memories. But the trend in the newer machines is to use faster and cheaper integrated circuit memories, which are volatile.
what would happen to your drilling operation if the power failed momentarily?
You'd be in trouble. You'd have to reload. Now, there's several ways around this. If you have a routine drilling operation, what you could do, rather than using a read-write memory, like this one is, you could permanently store your program in read-only memory, in which case, no matter what you do, you won't change that memory. So for very routine applications, you can get around the power problem by using a read-only memory. If you can't tolerate power going down, you can use a battery. If you want the computer to shut down when the power does go off, you could have an auxiliary form of memory, such as a cassette tape recorder, which you can automatically start up and reload the memory. So there are a number of ways around the power failure problem. But it's certainly something that you do have to consider, especially in critical applications where you're in trouble with the power does go down. When we program this, it takes about an hour. Incidentally, what's programmed in here isn't quite like what I described. It takes about, how long did it go? It took about 30 minutes to program it to splitter. And we had to program it in here because we had to have continuous power on the memory. We couldn't program it outside and disconnect the power and bring the computer in here. So in order to keep memory active, we have to keep power on it.
How do you synchronize the actual position with your memory in your computer? So is the information you send is just...
Just the display. You initially would have to, in this particular case, you would have to set up your initial position so that the board was correctly positioned under the table. This particular set only has outputs to the table. If you are willing to, or if you wanted to use encoders and what have you, you could sense the position of the table, feed that into the computer, and the computer can start from there. But we have a very simple application here where we're only outputting information to the computer. Except from the flag, which is essentially an input to the computer, which we test. And that tells us when the table has been properly positioned.
How long did you say it took to program the computer? Say 30 minutes?
This particular program, I believe, takes about 200 memory locations, and it took about 30 minutes to manipulate all these.
You mean that's just to load the program? That wasn't to write the program, just to load it in.
Right, you have to sit down and switch.
But a storage, but a core memory computer may take like 3 minutes compared to 30. Is that not load the program?
It depends what you have. On this computer, the only way we have now entering instructions is via the switches. On a larger computer, you would put your program on IBM cards.
Right.
And then these cards would quickly be written into the computer. Okay, so it depends on your input mechanism that you have available. If you want to program a larger computer via the switches, it will take you the same order of time. In fact, it will probably take you longer because this computer has some facilities to make loading of the program easier. It automatically increments the address to the next location, for example. Okay, Brian, would you like to go? We hope that the memory still has stored in what we put in 2 hours ago. If there's been a momentary part of that, in fact, might not be.
Because this is the program, and these are the wires connecting to the computer. This is now programmed. These are the connections from the computer to the interface equipment. This interface equipment, as Dr. Little has described, takes the computer outputs, making it compatible with the stepping motors and with the solenoids on the billing table. So I'm now at memory location 0000, all the way across, memory location 0, which is the first instruction. By pressing the start button, the program will begin to execute. In this particular case, to reach a particular hole, we move in the X direction first, then in the Y direction, the hole is then drilled, and then the next X motion, then Y motion goes on. When the sequence of drilling is complete, you'll see the halt instruction appear in the instruction register on the computer, which, as you see in your notes, is 11011. So I'll just push the button and let it go. It's now moving in the X direction. It's now moving in the Y direction. There's a problem with experiencing here with static electricity, and it may have set an issue in a long sleep.
The fact that we have a lot of loose wires here, they act very much like antennas. And it looks very much like this is what's happened. But what we would like you to do is to come up and have a look and see what the display registers are like, the terminals, the switches, the logos, and load address buttons. And perhaps while some of you are out here, we might be able to get the thing working properly.
Gentlemen, I hope you'll have time to come up and have a look at it. If you don't, you're leaving now. Safe journey. I hope it has been of some value to you. If this course has been some value to you, try and communicate it, or please communicate it, with the Educational Activities Board. Tomorrow there's a course on integrated circuits, which may be of interest to you, since I understand there is still openings in that course if you wish to take it. Thank you.